Good morning. My name is Corey Long. I'm a very grateful and enthusiastic member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Alateen. I'm going to start with a prayer for me. You guys can listen in, but this is really more for me. May we be happy. May we be well, happy, and peaceful. May no harm come to us. May we always meet with spiritual success. May we also have patience, courage, understanding, and determination to meet and overcome the inevitable difficulties, problems, and failings in life. May we always rise above them with morality, integrity, forgiveness, compassion, mindfulness, and wisdom. I want to thank Lee for inviting me to come and do this. He called, I don't know how long ago he called, but he said, we got to get you to Atlanta. And I said, okay, so I got in the car and came. And here I am. I want to thank Cora for hosting me and being in touch with me before this happened. I want to thank all the other speakers. It's always a privilege and an honor to be here. I always laugh when I see the flyer and it's all these AA speakers and it says Al-Anon participation. And then beside my name, it says Al-Anon. I'm like, oh, I'm the participation. Yay. But it is an honor and a privilege to be here and to be the Al-Anon speaker, because we got sick together. It's really great that we get healthy together, and I appreciate that opportunity. I got here because I married a man who's afflicted with the disease of alcoholism. I didn't marry a schmuck. I married a really incredible man, but he happens to be afflicted with the disease of alcoholism. And I'm here because I love alcoholics. I don't know anybody who comes to Al-Anon. We may not like the disease, but we love the alcoholic. That's why we're here. And if I say anything today that sounds as if I am denigrating an alcoholic, please know that I'm not. I absolutely love alcoholics. That's why I'm still here. But I do. But we like to laugh. And I'd rather laugh than cry about it, you know. So that's what my sponsor says. We take alcoholism seriously, but we don't take it personally. My husband didn't do any of it to me. And so I am supposed to share with you in a general way what I was like, what happened to me, and what I am like today. I have brought my daily reader in case I run out of things to say. It's never happened, but hope springs eternal. You'll know when God shows up, because I end up talking a lot faster than you might expect me to talk. I don't sound like I'm from Alabama, because I'm just living there. I'm not actually from Alabama. So hold on. Here we go. Hey. I got here on September 18th, 1998. If you are doing the math, that is almost 24 years. I got here on my 2-month wedding anniversary. I had waited almost 36 years to meet and marry a perfect man. He was a raging alcoholic when I did it, and I did not think there was anything wrong with me that his not drinking as much would not fix. I did not want him to quit drinking. I didn't trust people who didn't drink. There's something wrong with people who don't drink. They're a little weird, don't you think? Everybody, I didn't grow up with alcoholism. I knew nothing about the disease of alcoholism. I didn't know about it from the alcoholic side. I didn't know about it from the family side. This is making me crazy. It's got to come off. So I didn't grow up with alcoholism. I am an incredibly well-educated woman, but I like to say alcoholism made me stupid. Because it did, because I loved an alcoholic. We got here on our 2-month wedding anniversary. I was not raised in alcoholism. I don't know if there's alcoholism in my family. But what I know is, I used to say that every man I was attracted to was alcoholic. What I know today is I am bothered by anybody's drinking. I was telling Cora this morning, years ago, I used to sit in the Atlanta airport and watch people at the bar to see how many drinks they were drinking, to see if they were going to be drunk on my flight. I don't know what I thought I was going to do if they were drunk on my flight, but I needed to know, don't you know, just in case, to be prepared. I am happy to report I don't have to do that anymore. So, but I got here. I'm going to tell you what happened to get me here. Because, like I said, it was our 2-month wedding anniversary. I'd met my husband. I have his full permission to break his anonymity. We met in high school in the Republic of Singapore. He was class president, most sparkling personality, and I had just gotten there my senior year. It's one thing that happened to me growing up is I moved a lot. I had never lived anywhere more than 3 years until I got to Alabama. And I'd always move, so I would never had that group of friends that people have talked about they've had their whole life. So what that did for me, and what I did with that, nobody told me this. I did it myself. I made it up all by myself in this incredible brain that I have. I decided I would be whoever you wanted me to be so that I could fit in. As long as I can remember, I have never felt like I was enough, and I have never felt... felt like I fit in. I was not tall enough. I was not short enough. I was not skinny enough. I was not fat enough. I was not cute enough. I was not funny enough. I was not enough. That is something inside of me. And I believe that's how the disease of alcoholism manifests in me. I was not enough. And I needed you to make me feel okay. So I'd be whoever you wanted me to be so that you would make me feel okay, which makes me a perfect magnet for alcoholics. Right? And I love alcoholics. I just think you guys are everything that I am not. So let me ask this question real quick. How many alcoholics, I am your first Al-Anon speaker, if you're willing to put your hand up. Oh, yay. Thank you for being here. Yay. How many of you are pure Al-Anons, which means you are not a dual member? Yay. Thank you guys for being here. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. All right. I have the same disease as an alcoholic has. I just don't have the allergy to alcohol. All right, alcohol doesn't do to me what it does, what I've heard it does to alcoholics. I will tell you what does do it for me. Alcoholic men, they do it for me the way alcohol sounds like it does it for you. Right? And they're everything I'm not. They're exciting, they're thrilling, they're reckless, they're daring, they're daunting, they're terrifying. But that is what I want, right? I said one time at a conference that I was very risk averse, and my husband's sponsor turned around to me and he said, "Except in the men that you pick." And I thought, okay, fair point. That is true. So I'm always looking for something outside of me, somebody outside of me to make me feel okay. And what happened was, years and years and years ago, Kent and I got married in 98. So in 97, I'm living in Montgomery, Alabama. I am convinced that the reason I am not involved in a relationship with anybody is because I am too intellectually superior to the men that live in Montgomery, Alabama. They were afraid of an assertive, aggressive woman. They had reason to be afraid of me, let me just tell you that, because the key word there was aggressive, not assertive. It's otherwise known as being a bitch. And a little arrogant, just in case you didn't notice. So I'm sitting at my house, and I'm remembering the last time I kind of sort of felt okay about myself, and it was when I was in high school. So I got on the Internet, and I went to the high school bulletin board and posted a message on the high school bulletin board. Anybody who graduated in the class of 1980, email me. And what happened was in February of 1997, my husband found me on the Internet. He says he found me in the Wild Monkey Woman chat room, and I said, that doesn't make you look any better than me. He did not. He found me on the high school bulletin board. And on February 1st, 98, somewhere in there, February 1st, 1998, he emailed me. And I emailed him back, and then he emailed me, and then I emailed him back, and I said, enough of this, call me. And I typed my phone number into the email, and I typed my phone number in incorrectly. And my husband, God love him, spent an hour and a half typing numbers into a phone to figure out if you could get me. He didn't know where I was living. He didn't know what my last name was. He didn't know if I was married, if I was using my maiden name. And he found me. And if I had known then that I was going to be sharing this from a podium many years later, it would never have happened. And I'm as horrified as you all will be. The first phone call that we had was 11 and a half hours long. Yes, exactly. And the conversation went with me going, blah, and him going, uh-huh, blah, uh-huh, blah, uh-huh. But two really important things happened during that conversation. The very first thing that happened was I said, I want a man who doesn't drink. Because, you see, I'd been involved with a guy who drank. There was no physical abuse in that relationship, but there was a lot of verbal abuse in that relationship. And I made a decision that I was never going to get involved with a man who drank again. So I said, I want a man who doesn't drink. And he said, well, I don't drink much. Well, so how much exactly is much? And he said 5 or 6 beers a week. And I thought, well, we all know, first off, 5 or 6 beers is not really drinking, and beer is not drinking. I have no idea why I did not think beer was alcohol, but I did not. But what that tells you about me is the moment somebody expresses an interest in me, any boundary I've set to protect myself goes right out the window, because it's much more important to me that I am with you than I be by myself. Right? So that boundary goes right out the window. And the other thing is, I also do not know how to date. If you express any interest in me whatsoever, I am in love. And we are going to trudge the road of happy destiny together. So he doesn't really drink because 5 or 6 beers a week is not drinking. And then in the middle of this conversation, I said, yeah, but do you want me? And he said, yes. I'm in love. Right there. We're done. This is it. This is the man I'm going to marry. And honest to God, I hung the phone up that next morning. I called my best girlfriend. I said, this is the man I'm going to marry. And that is one thing you will know about somebody who has been profoundly and deeply affected by the disease of alcoholism. When we set our mind to things, we can make things happen. And I set about to make that happen. He was living in Washington, D.C. I was living in Montgomery, Alabama. God works in strange and mysterious ways. He was working for the airlines, and he could fly to Atlanta for $20. So he would fly to Atlanta. I'd pick him up. We'd come to my house. He will tell you I had what he wanted, a house, insurance, a bank account, a job. I will tell you he had what I wanted, which was he was interested in me. That was all it took. In July, my father called me, and he said, pick a wedding date. I don't care what date it is, just pick a wedding date, because my little sister had switched a couple wedding dates. It was a little chaotic. He said, pick a wedding date. So I did. I picked my parents' 40th wedding anniversary, and I called Kent, and I said, hey, how do you feel about getting married? And he said, okay. We hadn't talked about it. It had never come up. That is no impediment to me. Thank you very much. And so about 15 minutes later, God love my husband, he called me back, and he said, do you think I should get divorced first? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. But here's the deal. Now, I will say this. I do need to qualify that on his behalf. He had been separated from his wife for 6 years. You know, he was an active alcoholic when all of this was going on, right? But here's what that says about me. All right? Normal people, I have come to discover, would probably get the divorce in hand first and then plan the wedding. Not me, because I have got my man. I am not letting him go. And so I've got to snag him while I can. So I am planning a divorce on one hand. I am planning a wedding on the other hand. I have the ability to do that because of my profession, and it does not occur to me that this is insane behavior. It was an example my sponsor used to point out to me of not sound judgment. Most people would make sure you had the divorce first. No, not me. I am just plowing ahead. We are going to get married. I do like to report, sometimes I forget, in Alabama you have to be divorced for 30 days in order to get married. We were going to get married on March 28th. His divorce was final on February 18th. We could have gotten married on March 28th because I had him divorced with 10 days to spare. Did you notice how I said I had him divorced with 10 days to spare? But what ended up happening was my father ended up dying of brain cancer. And I remember standing out in front of my father's farm, in front of my parents' farmhouse, and looking up at God. I had a very warped idea about God when I got here, and saying, please, God, just let my dad live. Please, God, just let him live. If you let him live, I will do whatever you want me to do. And my father died of brain cancer. And I took that in my brilliant mind and thought, God hates me. And that was the idea, God, I brought to you when I came to you the next year. But I made a decision then, when my dad died, that was it. There was no God. There was a God. Not that there wasn't a God. I knew there was a God. And there was a God who had a good girl list and a bad girl list, and I was clearly on the bad girl list. Turns out, after a fifth step, I was on the goofy girl list, not the bad girl list. But that's the idea, God, I brought to you. Right before we got married, this is the insanity of the family disease of alcoholism. I do not drink. That's a shocker, isn't it? I don't drink. But my husband is drinking, and I'm worried about his drinking. And one night he comes home, and I am sitting on the floor in our sunroom sobbing, because I am absolutely convinced with every fiber of my being that the only way my husband can be with me is if he's drunk. And I actually said it out loud. I think the only way you can be with me is if you're drunk. And he said, oh, no, honey, I'm doing controlled drinking. I had no idea what that meant. I know today what that meant. I had no idea what that meant. And a few months later, he loves me. I don't know what that means, but he loves me. A few months later, he says to me, his parents are coming for the wedding, and he says, my parents don't know I drink. And I thought, well, that's weird. You're 36 years old. But whatever. I'm in the middle of planning a wedding. And he said, so we need to have a refrigerator in the bedroom so I can have beer while they're here. And I thought, that's a perfect solution to this problem. And we bought a refrigerator. Again, an example of insane thinking. That is how I am profoundly and deeply affected by the disease of alcoholism, and I don't drink. So what ended up happening is we got married. 2 months later, the week before he got sober and the week before I came to Al-Anon, I love to play putt-putt golf. I suck at it, but I love to play it. And so there was none in Montgomery. We drove an hour and a half to Callaway Gardens to play putt-putt golf. And it was a Saturday morning. And I did not know anything about alcoholism when I got here. I didn't know that my husband could drink or he could do stuff. But we couldn't do them both at the same time. I didn't know that. I didn't know that he was at late stage alcoholism and that he was getting up in the morning drinking before we get anything. But on this particularly Saturday morning, he said, I'm going to take you to play putt-putt golf. And we drove to Callaway Gardens, and I did not know that my husband had not been drinking that day. We got to Callaway Gardens, and the only way I can describe my husband to you is he was so grumpy. So grumpy. Alcoholics Anonymous says restless, irritable, and discontent. Our friends in Canada say itchy, bitchy, and twitchy, which I think is a much better description. And that's what my husband was. And after about 10 minutes, I said to him, do we need to go? And he said, yes. And so we got in the car, and I do not know why I said this. I said, do we need to stop and get you beer for the ride home? And my husband said, no. That's all he said, but everything in him changed. And I don't know what you do when you have an experience like that, but I'll tell you what I do. I just shut down. I don't have any idea what to do with this. And it's not that I'm going to pretend. I consciously am going to pretend like this is not going to happen. I'm just going to shut down. I don't know what to do with this. So we drove all the way home. We didn't speak about it for the rest of the day. To my husband and I have never spoken about that day. I have spoken about it a lot, but we have never spoken about it. I just shut down. And when I got up the next morning, the way I'm affected by the disease of alcoholism is it didn't happen. I wasn't in denial. I wasn't pretending. It didn't happen. It was gone from my brain. 4 days later, on a Thursday afternoon, I have to go to a professional obligation, and I leave the house screaming like a lunatic. I am the one who is slamming doors, screaming at him. My husband's not doing anything he hasn't been doing, which is sitting on the couch drinking, right? And I'm screaming like a crazy woman. And I went to the professional obligation. I'm 10 minutes from my house coming home, and I heard a voice as clear as a bell in my head said, if you love him, you go to Al-Anon. Well, I've told you how arrogant I am. I don't know what Al-Anon is, so it can't be anything important because I know everything that's important. So I just disregarded that voice. I walked in the house, and my husband said to me, I cannot quit drinking without help. And I said, yes, let me help. I'm really good at help. And I am up. I have got the Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance provider program. I'm like, what do we do? What do we do? And I've got it. And it says in there that I take him to mental health on. And I call mental health. They're open at 7 o'clock this next morning. We are the first one in the door at 7 o'clock the next morning. The woman looks at me and she said, do you have insurance? And I said, of course I have insurance. I am a rules and regulation kind of gal. If you say get insurance, I have insurance. When I got to AA conferences, they were saying people were driving without licenses and they were driving without insurance. They were driving without registration. Oh, my God, my head almost exploded. How do you do that? How do you do that? Right? My husband will be driving, we'll be speeding down the interstate, there'll be a cop coming the other way, and I'll go, he says, do you want me to surrender? Yes, yes I do. Turn yourself in. Oh my God, it's crazy making for me. And so, of course I have insurance. Why wouldn't I have insurance? And so she said, take him down to treatment. All right, we're going to treatment. I had no idea what treatment was. I'm an incredibly well-educated woman. I had no idea what treatment was. And I used to say I didn't know what I thought they were going to do, and that is not true. I know exactly what I thought they were going to do. I thought they were going to tell him why he needed to not drink as much. They were going to explain it. I'm a big explainer. Those of you who know my friend Ellen know we're big explainers. I like to explain things. And if I can explain it to you at the right time, when you're in the right mood, when you're paying attention, you will clearly understand what I am saying, and you will say, how stupid of me not to get that. You are absolutely right. Right? And if that doesn't happen, there's only one of two reasons why that won't happen. Is one, I didn't explain it clearly enough. Highly unlikely. Two, you were not paying attention when I explained it the first time. Probably more likely. Consequently, I will explain it to you again. Until you either agree with me or you pass out. One of the two. We were talking about this morning, you know, that whole thing. They used to say it a lot when I got in, but I haven't heard it for a while. Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And I thought, dumbest thing on the planet, because when I'm right, I am happy. Yep. My sponsor said, do you want to be right or do you want to be free? Big difference. Big difference. If you can let go of your idea how you think things ought to be, you've got a lot of freedom in that. You don't have to control everything. So do I want to be right or do I want to be free? Well, at that particular moment in time, I wanted to be right. And so I thought they were going to explain to him, wave the magic Blue Cross Blue Shield wand over his head and said, don't drink as much. And he was going to say, oh, duh, of course. And we were all going to go home. That is not what happened. What happened was we walked into the intake nurse's office and they said name and he gave his name and I gave his name. You were way quicker than I was. They gave his birthday. His gave his birthday. I gave his birthday. Said, how much do you drink a night? And I said 8 beers a night, and he said 18 beers a night. And I whipped around on him, right? And before I could say anything, the intake nurse looked at me, and she said, what are you, his mother? And I was insulted and offended because I thought she was suggesting I looked old and tired. Turns out we have a picture between the mirrors on the bathroom of a month before he got sober, and I looked old and tired. But that is what I thought she was implying. And then she did the most horrific thing, and she kicked me out of her office. I'm like, it's my insurance. Why are you kicking me out of this office? But she kicked me out of the office. She sent me down to the family counselor, and the family counselor, this is what I heard her say. I have a disease that affects my hearing. Oftentimes I hear things that are not said. Other times I do not hear what is said. There are times I've been known to have entire conversations in my head and you don't even have to be present to participate. Kent has said to me, I said that, I told you that. He said, was I there? I don't know if you were actually there. However, I digress. This is what I heard the family counselor, her name was also Martha, but she was Miss Martha. Beautifully coiffed hair, nails were done, gorgeous outfit. Miss Martha was very much a Southern belle. And this is what I heard her say. Honey, if you love him, you will go to Al-Anon. And I thought, well, of course I love him. I've just married him, for God's sakes. Fine, I will go to Al-Anon. I had no idea what Al-Anon was, and I cannot show up not looking like I know what's going on. I don't actually have to know what's going on. I just have to look like I know what's going on. So I went home, and I immediately, though, they told me to go home and pack him a bag. That was shocking. I had no idea they were keeping him, and they did. It's like, oh, who knew? Packed him a bag, went home, and got onto an online Al-Anon meeting. And online Al-Anon meetings in 1998 were nothing like online Al-Anon meetings today. It was one of those forms where you type in stuff, and God bless everybody in that meeting. Every single person in that meeting said to me, get to a meeting in person. I thought they were being incredibly kind. I know today it's because I was interrupting every 20 seconds. But they were kind to me. And so I went, there was an Al-Anon meeting at the treatment center the next day. And I went to the Al-Anon meeting before the family counseling meeting, before I could see him. And I walked in. There were three little old ladies. They looked like they were 103 if they were a day. I was newly married. I was 35 years old. They looked ancient to me. Alcoholism affects my perception. And again, this is what I heard them say. Oh, honey, he'll drink again. They all drink again. But have hope. And I absolutely burst into tears because I didn't know what to do with that. I burst into tears. What does that mean? The other thing they said was the answer was in the literature. All right, the answer's in the literature. I'm a good study. June knows where I'm going with this. I bought every Al-Anon book they had. Within a week, I had every Al-Anon book published at that time. I was hauling it around in a canvas sack, right? Because I have the answers. The problem was I didn't know what the questions were, and I was asking the wrong questions. The questions I was asking are, what is wrong with him? Why does he do what he does? Why does he say the crap he says? Why does he buy the crap that he buys? And the biggest one that baffles me to this day, why does he think the way that he thinks? Right? Scott Ridman used to say that his wife got profoundly and deeply ill due to prolonged exposure to him. I now know that I expected my husband's thinking to change due to prolonged exposure to me. It has not changed. His thinking has not changed due to his exposure to me. But I would spend hours wondering why he thought the way he thought, why he did the stuff he did, all this kind of stuff. It never once occurred to me to say, what is wrong with me? It never once occurred to me to say, why do you do the stuff that you do? Why do you say the stuff that you do? Say, why do you think the way that you think? It never occurred to me because I wasn't the one with the problem. I'm not drinking. Compared to him, active alcoholic who can't hold a job, I look good. I've got a job. I've got a bank account. I've got a house. I've got cars. I look good compared to him. Compared to normal people, I look like a nutter. I mean, I'm just insane, right? Unbelievable. But I didn't know that at the time. 4 days in, married 2 months, 4 days in, my husband comes home to me and says, I need to be rigorously honest with you. I didn't like that conversation then. I don't like it today when we have them. But he said, I did not graduate from college. It was incredibly important to me that he had graduated from college, and he had not graduated from college. He said, I did not get an early out from the military. There is not $25,000 in a bank account in Northern Virginia. I had a huge fear of financial insecurity when I got here that had nothing to do with him. It had everything to do with me. And I got kicked out of the Army for alcohol rehabilitation failure. This is not my first treatment center. It's my third. And one of them was a year long. Thank you. Yes. Yes. Oh, my God. I don't know what you do with that information. I will tell you what I did with it, is I sat on the couch and I cried all night. I will tell you what my husband did, is he went to bed and slept like a baby. He'll tell you it's because it was the first time he was willing to be honest and accept the consequences. He fully expected me to kick him out and to leave him. I will tell you I did not. I will tell you that thought never crossed my mind. And I will tell you why it didn't cross my mind. This is the result of working the steps in Al-Anon with really strong sponsorship. It never crossed my mind because there was no way I could make that look good. How do you leave your marriage after 2 months? I would look like an idiot. I can't spin that. I'm good, but I can't spin that. So I'm not leaving. It never occurred to me to leave, right? I'm in it. Oh, damn near. I've made a decision. I didn't know I'd change my mind. I had no idea choices were an option. So I'm in it. So I cried all night. The next day, my husband went to the treatment center and told them what he had told me. And God loved the treatment center. The guy who happened to be my husband's counselor was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, you will go to Alcoholics Anonymous tonight. And they sent him to Alcoholics Anonymous. And my husband came back from Alcoholics Anonymous, and he said, oh, my God, I have to go to a meeting every day for a year. And I said, being spiritual that I am, well, what am I going to do? He said, well, I think you should go to Al-Anon, because Al-Anon is basically just the same program as AA. And I said, okay, because I'm going to help him stay sober. And that began the next 6 months of my husband sponsoring me in Al-Anon. Because, you see, I don't need a sponsor, because there's nothing wrong with me. I'm just going to help him stay sober. Right? That's what we're going to do. And so he starts going to AA. He's got this sponsor. I'm going to Al-Anon. I am going to Al-Anon. I am not working a step. I don't have a sponsor. I'm reading the literature, but I'm not talking to anybody because I'll look dumb because I don't know anything about this. So I'm just not going to say anything because it's all about how I look. And what ended up happening is very shortly after my husband got into recovery, this sponsor that he had, I didn't like his sponsor then. I don't like the man today. Turns out it's immaterial and irrelevant whether I like my husband's sponsor. And the sponsor said, we're going to this conference at the beach. And Kent came on and said, I've got to go to this conference at the beach. And I said, we are not going to a conference at the beach. We can't possibly afford to go to a conference at the beach. My husband had been unemployable and didn't have a job. And I said, we can't afford to go to a conference at the beach. And you need to tell this guy we're not going to a conference at the beach. And he did exactly what I told him to do. And I know he did because I stood next to him when he did it. We had a phone on the wall back then. He picked him up and he said, Corey says, we can't afford to go to the conference at the beach. And this guy says, you said you were willing to go to any lengths to stay sober. It's only $250. I will see you at the beach. Click. And I thought, rude. These people in AA are so rude. And my husband did something he'd never done before. He turned around to me and he said, I love you and I am more than happy for you to come with me. But I'm going with or without you. It was the first time he had stood up to me. Every other time when I had said something, my husband did this, right? I thought that meant he was actually agreeing with me. I know today he's probably saying, please, God, make her shut up. Just make her stop. So this was the first time he'd actually stood up to me. He said, I love you, but I'm going with or without you. I told this guy I'd follow every suggestion he had, and I'm going to do it because I want to stay sober. And I thought to myself, I cannot possibly send my husband to a conference at the beach, an Alcoholics Anonymous conference at the beach. There are going to be alcoholic women there. I know that. And I'm pretty sure that what the alcoholic women are going to be wearing at the beach are going to be cutoffs and tank tops, and they're probably going to be sitting on the boys' laps, and they're going to be wiggling. I made all of this up in my head, right? All of it in my head, and I thought, one of you women is going to steal him from me now that I've gotten him sober, so you are not, no, you are not going by yourself. That is the reason I went to my first conference. I got in the car, and I went within the first conference. The only two speakers I can remember from that conference was the Al-Anon speaker was Mary Pearl. The AA speaker was Clancy. And the only way I can describe how I felt about it is I was horrified. I was appalled that people would get up in front of a room full of people, strangers. There would be somebody recording it. In my profession, we call that a confession. Didn't hear any warning being given. They would record it. You would laugh about stuff that I didn't think was funny. I was horrified. And I turned around to Kent and said, I will never do that. Be careful what you say. Just saying. The other thing that happened is I was sitting in the very front row because I get distracted watching all of you. Who needs my help? I was in the very front row, and I leaned over to Kent, and I said, I keep hearing about this sponsor. Do you think I should get a sponsor? And the woman behind me, it sounded to me as if she screamed at me. Turns out it was Mary Pearl, and she probably did scream at me. And she said, get a sponsor. And I was humiliated that she had heard me. And the only thing I can tell you about how I felt after hearing Clancy and Mary Pearl was, we are not that bad. We are not as bad as them. We don't need to do this as long as them. It's 12 steps, 12 days, maybe 12 weeks. Right. We are incredibly well educated. We are not that bad. But I walked out of hearing Mary Pearl and the taper. I will be forever grateful to tapers. The taper was a guy named James, and he handed me a set of CDs from a woman out of Ohio, and he said, hey, honey, I must have looked like I'd been hit with a brick. He said, here, honey, listen to her. You might relate to her better. And he gave me a set of tapes of a woman talking about the Al-Anon steps, and it changed my life. It was just a complete right turn. I listened to that and thought, oh, my God. And then one of the things somebody had suggested was I start praying about asking for a sponsor. I'm like, okay, I don't trust this God that you guys are talking about, but I'm pretty sure he's ignoring me anyway, so I'll say the words, but I won't actually mean it. And I started praying about asking for a sponsor to be put in my path. And a few months later at my home group on a Wednesday night, this woman showed up. Her husband was in the military and been transferred to Montgomery, Alabama. And I remember this meeting. I hope I never forget it. We were going around the circle, and the topic was the 12th step. And it got to me, and I said, well, I haven't worked any of the steps, but I'm carrying the message. I got around to her, and I know this is not what she said, but it is what I heard. What I heard her say was, oh, honey, you are not carrying the message. You are spreading the disease. Shut up. And it hurt my feeling. I had one feeling when I got here. It was a big one, and it was hurt. I was hurt all the time. And it hurt my feeling, my big feeling, and I went home sobbing. And Kent is saying, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? And I was sure, and he was sure, I was going to say, I'm quitting Al-Anon. And what came out of my mouth instead was, I'm going to ask you to be my sponsor. It was the wrong thing to say because he was like a dog with a bone. Now, one of the things that happened in that 6 months that my husband was sponsoring me is the first thing that happened was his sponsor gave him this little sticker to put on the bathroom mirror that said, you are looking at the problem. And I thought to myself, every morning and every evening, that is so good for Kent. Never occurred that it was looking at me, right? That was the first thing that happened. The second thing that happened was I was going to help him stay sober. And the way I'm going to help him stay sober is he decided to take up running when he got sober. He'd been in the military. He wanted to get back in shape. So he started running. And apparently we both forgot he was alcoholic because within 2 weeks he's training for a marathon. So I have to help him train for the marathon. And the way I thought of helping him train for a marathon was I would buy a bike. Now, I will tell you, I was twice the woman I am today when I got here. I was not in shape in any form or fashion. And I bought a $79 Walmart bike, and I would ride with him. And if you've ever trained for a marathon, the distances increase and increase and increase every week. I did not know that. And he's a chatter when he exercises. I just want to kill him when we exercise. And so he's running, and I've said to him, I'm going to ask Luana to be my sponsor. And so now when we're running 6 miles on a Sunday morning, I'm on this bike almost dying. He's going, have you asked? What step are you on? Have you asked? And I didn't know that Mary Pearl had planted a seed, but she had, because one Sunday morning I couldn't take it anymore, and I whipped that bike around. I raced up to the house. I picked the phone up. I called Luana. I said, would you be my sponsor? And she said, well, why me, honey? I said, because I'm going to kill him. I'm going to run him over with a truck, make it look like a traffic accident. I just need one woman on the jury. I'm pretty sure I can get off. And she said to me, no, honey, why me as your sponsor? And I said, because I want what you have. And I didn't know what I was saying at the time, but I know today what I was saying. What I was saying at the time was I knew what she was living with. She was living with untreated alcoholism. She had a husband who wasn't going to meetings. She was living with a teenage son who was behaviorally challenged, to say the least. She was living with a younger son who was developmentally disabled, and they were content, and there was laughter, and they were happy. And she was sharing that at meetings. But what she was living with and what she was doing and how they were living. And I was terrified. I was absolutely filled with fear. I was sure he was going to get sober and find somebody better suited for him in AA, and he was going to leave me. And I wanted that peace and the serenity and the joy. And I loved my husband, and I wanted that for us. And she said something that was critically important to me, and I've said it to everybody who's ever asked me to sponsor them. She said, well, are you willing to do what I've done for as long as I've done it to get what I've gotten? And I said yes. I had no idea what I was agreeing to. And had I known what I was agreeing to, I probably wouldn't have agreed to it. And she immediately got me into service. She immediately got me into the steps. I was in the literature, but she helped me with the literature, right? And I met her every week on Wednesday night, and we did the step work, and I was in service work, and we'd go to district meetings. We'd go to assembly meetings. We would go to conferences. Kent and I were going to conferences. He was very involved in his AA program, and things were changing in our house. The things were changing in the house because I was changing in the house. I was changing, right? I could see the changes in him. I couldn't see any changes in me. And we start doing this deal, and we're rocking along, and it's amazing to me what's happening. And about 3 to 4 or 5 years into the program, well, that must have been about 3 years, Kent went back to school. He got a degree. He got a job. I'm working. I am miserably unhappy in my job, And I'm talking to LaWanna about it, and she said, start praying to God. Ask him to show you the way. And out of the blue, I've been applying for all sorts of different jobs. I didn't want any of the jobs I was applying for, but I needed to get out of the job that I was in, right? And out of the blue, a guy that I had worked for called me and said, hey, I hear you're not happy. And I said, I am not. He said, come talk to me. And I went to talk to him. And he said, I'd like to offer you this position. And it was exactly what I was making at the job I was in, but I would lose a car and I would lose a credit card. And I went home and I talked to Ken. I said, what do I do? I fear financial insecurity. And he said, I don't care what the money is. You are miserably unhappy and you're bringing it home. We'll figure it out. Just do something. And I talked to LaWanna, and she said, either you trust the God of your understanding or you don't trust the God of your understanding. Walk in the direction of your dreams. Where you end up is up to God. And so I took the job. And it was one of the best decisions I've ever made. And I was in that job for 18 years, and I love that job. And I will circle back around to that. I actually will circle back around to this, to the job thing. But I changed jobs, and it made a huge difference. It was the first time I was willing to step out on faith, and I was willing to trust the God of my understanding. And so we're rocking along, and I'm doing the service work. Kent's done what he's doing. And in about 5 years, I'm watching my husband. One of the very first things we did, when we got into recovery, one of the things that sponsor told him to do was Ken had to go to a meeting every single night for a year, but on Saturday nights, his home group had an open AA speaker meeting. I am forever grateful to open AA speaker meetings. I am forever grateful to members of Alcoholics Anonymous who will share about the disease of alcoholism, because I've told you how my husband lied to me about all of these things before we got married, and I couldn't trust a thing he was telling me, but you didn't have any reason to lie to me. And you told me about the disease of alcoholism, and you told me what it looked like, and I learned about the disease of alcoholism from you all, and I'm so grateful for that. And so we'd go to open AA speaker meetings, and we'd go to dinner every year, every Saturday night for a year, and I'm hooked on AA speakers. I love listening to people share experience, strength, and hope, right? I don't need you to tell me your opinion. I don't need you to tell me your beliefs. Tell me what you did, and tell me what happened. We are a program of action. Do you know the steps in Al-Anon and the steps in AA are identical except for the 12th step? And in the 12th step, you all talk about carrying the message to alcoholics. In Al-Anon, we carry the message to others because apparently alcoholics won't listen to us. So, you get the alcoholics, we get everybody else on the planet. Right? So I'm working these steps. I am watching my husband. I know what alcoholism looks like. I know that alcoholism, that the drinking is but a symptom of the disease of alcoholism. I have read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is not conference-approved literature, but it is the textbook about alcoholism. If my husband had cancer, I'd learn everything I could learn about cancer. My husband has alcoholism. I'm learning everything I can learn about alcoholism. I read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I understood drinking was but a symptom of it, and I'm watching my husband, and something is not quite right with my husband. There's no drinking, there's no drugs, there's never been drugs, but there's no drinking, but there's something not quite right. But here's the difference. Instead of going to my husband and saying, what's the matter? Is it me? Is it something I've done? Are you mad at me? I'm going to my sponsor saying something is not quite right. Right? And she said, so I'll give you an example. My husband, we have had issues with finances for as long as we've been married up until about 18 years into the program. And we ended up giving him an allowance, and he bought a gun safe. Now, if you know anything about gun safes, they can be ginormous, huge. It was so big it wouldn't get into the house, so it was in the garage. Now, I am not stupid. I'm incredibly well-educated. I knew if he had a gun safe, there are probably guns in the safe, right? But there's no way his allowance covers the cost of a gun safe and some weapons. So I know something's going on, and so I said to my sponsor, something's not quite right. And she said, you can interrupt the process if you would like in order to make yourself feel better, but he will never get where he needs to go. Are you willing to do that today? And one day at a time for 2 years, I was unwilling to interrupt the process. But the difference was I was talking to my sponsor. I wasn't talking to him about it. I was talking to her, and I wasn't talking to him. And I was going to meetings, and I was doing inventory, and I was looking at my fear and my anxiety. What is it about this that's terrifying me? And I was working all that out with her so that when he came to me, and he did eventually come to me, and he said, I need to be rigorously honest with you. I've gotten us into some financial difficulty. And being the spiritual giant as I am, I said, what do you mean us? Right? And I often share this because my people will want to know what the amount is. And I also share it because of the reactions to AA's is so different from the reactions to Al-Anon's. Within 2 years, he had gotten us $42,000 in credit card debt. Those are my people. I share that at a conference. I was watching my husband sit right back in there. And a guy sitting next to him said, dude, that's nothing. Fist bump. And I don't understand that at all. I do not understand that at all. But what happened when he told me that, I said, honey, it's only money. We'll figure it out. But what are you willing to do differently? Because I am not willing to continually go back to this financial issue time and time and time again. Right? And he'll tell you that it was untreated alcoholism manifesting in the financial issues because he was in the middle of AA, but it was untreated alcoholism. So he had to do some things differently in AA. And he did some things differently in AA. And because my husband and I have been on the spiritual path together, I got to go along for the ride. And it was phenomenal. We started listening to speakers at conferences and asking them, what are you doing spiritually? What are you reading spiritually? One of the things somebody talked about was having sacred space in their house. So on the way back from a conference, I said to Kent, you know, we've got this guest bedroom. And he's like, yeah, we don't want any guests anyway, which is true. I said, why don't we turn it into a serenity room? So we got rid of all the guest furniture, and that's our serenity room. We've got all sorts of spiritual literature. We've got pictures and things in there that mean something to us. We've got an armchair. We've got a futon. It's where I talk to sponsees. It's where he does his stuff. It's been one. That's what we do. We're on the path together, right? And as things are changing and I'm working in my program, I'm thinking to people, why do you keep going? He's sober. Because life keeps happening. Life keeps happening. And one of the things my husband came to me and he said, he was working for the Department of Defense, and he said, they're asking for people to volunteer to go to Iraq and Afghanistan. And I feel like I need to do that. And because I had worked the steps in Al-Anon, I said to him, is this part of your 9-step amends to the military? Because he'd gotten kicked out. And he said, yes. And I knew to ask that because I knew what the steps were and I knew what they meant and I knew about the amends process. And I said, can I pray about it? And can I talk to my sponsor about it? And he said, of course. So I called my sponsor and said, oh my God, he wants to voluntarily deploy out to Afghanistan or Iraq. And I had completely forgotten my sponsor had been married to an Air Force colonel who'd been deployed 3 times. Yeah. And so she said to me, do you practice the traditions in your marriage? And I said, you know that I do. And she said, and what is the fifth tradition? And I read it so I don't screw it up. The Al-Anon fifth tradition is, each Al-Anon family group has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps of AA ourselves, by encouraging and understanding our alcoholic relatives, and by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics. And she said, well, if you're going to encourage and support your and understand your alcoholic relative, how can you possibly say no? And I said, well, when you put it that way, I don't guess that I can. Love you. Talk to you next week. Bye. Click. And So I went to Kent and I said, if this is something you feel you need to do for your amends process, I'm happy to support that. And I was terrified. But I know enough about recovery to know I am not willing to stand in the way of my husband's journey. I love my husband, and I want to honor him, and I want to respect him, and I want to show him dignity. And when I say to him no, or I say, let me do that for you, or I can take this on because I will do it better than you, I think I'm helping. What I'm really saying to him is I don't think you're smart enough to do it yourself. I don't think you're capable of doing it yourself, and I chip away at his dignity, and I don't want to do that. And so I said yes, and put it in the God box, and I moved on with my life. And about 4 years later, because God works in strange and mysterious ways, Kent called me up one night and said, all right, I'm picking your mom up. We're going to dinner. Okay. And I met him at the restaurant, and he said, I don't think I'm going to get to go. And I said, go where? I didn't have any idea what he was talking about. I had completely forgotten about it because I turned it over to the God of my understanding. All right, whatever. So I don't think I'm going to get to Floyd. And I went, oh, honey, I'm so sorry. You know, that's one of these times, Al-Anon says, you just have to be willing. You don't actually have to do anything. Yay! Right? That was on a Wednesday. Monday afternoon at 4 o'clock, I'm sitting at my desk. My husband calls me and he says, "Hey, guess what?" And I said, "What?" He said, "I'm going to Djibouti." And I said, "Where?" And he said, "Africa." And I said, "Wow." Because that's what you guys have taught me to say. Wow. Interesting. Apparently I say wow a lot because he sent me an email one time and I said wow and he said, "Is that a real wow or an Al-Anon wow?" So I said, "Wow, I'm at work. Let me talk to you later." Immediately called Luana and said, "Oh my God, he's being deployed to Africa." And she said, "Find something you can do together while you're apart." And I made the mistake of telling that to Kent. And his immediate reaction was scuba diving. And I said, "I am afraid of being underwater." And he said, "Scuba diving," because he still, when he doesn't want to hear what I'm saying, still hears, "Wah, wah, 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 wah." Right? So I think in my head, it's Djibouti, Africa. It's one of the poorest countries on the planet. There's no way they have scuba diving there. I will be fine. The other thing that I did was, on the instruction of my sponsor, was I prayed to the God of my understanding, who I now trusted and I now believed and I know wants me to be happy, joyous, and free, and said I'd be willing to go anywhere you wanted me to go and work with anybody you wanted me to work with while he was gone. And I thought I was going to stay at home and I was going to be keeping the home fires burning and I wasn't going to do anything. I was going to support my husband. He was going to go off and have this huge adventure in Djibouti, Africa. And I was terrified he was going to come back and say, "I really wish I was in the military and I'm leaving you." But I just have to trust the process. And I put him on a plane in August of 2010. He said, "I have to be in Djibouti in 10 days. And I had 10 days to put my husband on a plane and send him halfway around the world, and I'd get to see him one time in that year. And he said, "Don't cry at the airport." And I am pleased to report to you I didn't cry in front of him at the airport, because it's progress, not perfection. And I had to drop him at the airport, and I had to immediately drive to Nashville, Tennessee, to be at a conference, a Nashville, an AA conference I was supposed to be speaking at. And he called me when I was at that conference. He said, "I have landed in Djibouti. I'm in a tent with 65 guys. It's like 110 degrees. And I said, "It sucks to be you. I'm in a junior suite with chocolate-covered strawberries." So, and then he said, "Did you know that Djibouti, Africa is the second best place on the planet to scuba dive with whale sharks?" No, I did not. And he said, "My first scuba diving lesson is Wednesday. When is yours?" And I went, "Oh, crap." So I called Luana. I said, "He wants me to learn to scuba dive." And she said, "Learn to scuba dive." I said, "Luana, I am afraid of being underwater. What part of being afraid of being underwater is nobody grasping?" And she said, "I am convinced there is some sort of secret sponsorship retreat that you get to go to at 25 years or something. I'm convinced," because she said, "Do it afraid. Take God with you." Click. Oh, what? So Wednesday afternoon, I'm sitting in front of the scuba diving place. I turn around to the chair in the passenger side of my car, and I said, "Apparently, God, I'm going to learn to scuba dive. Try not to kill me." Obviously, I lived. But what happened was I learned to scuba dive, and Kent could go anywhere in the world where it would cost as much or less than it would cost to come from Djibouti to Montgomery. You can go anywhere in the world for that cost, because it's incredibly expensive to get from Djibouti to Montgomery. And he said, "What I'd rather do instead is have you come out here." And so he flew me to Tanzania, Africa, for a private 10-day photo safari, and then we spent 5 days scuba diving in the Indian Ocean. It was a trip of a lifetime. I'd like to report that I did not take over 4,200 pictures of animals, but I did. And I have them, and I can show them to you. I wouldn't have done that if it hadn't been for Al-Anon. I would not have had the courage to do it without the support of Al-Anon. We wouldn't have been in a position to do it if he hadn't been sober in AA. There was just there was no way that could have happened, right? And it was phenomenal. It was absolutely phenomenal. When I got to Nashville on that Thursday when Kent landed in Djibouti, I got a call on Friday from a woman in my area who said, "I've been going to open AA speaker meetings with my husband, and the women of Alcoholics Anonymous said, I need to work the steps of Al-Anon, and they told me you needed to take me through them. Will you take me through them?" And I said, "Yes." Because I said I'd be willing to do whatever it is God wanted me to do. And I spent that next year getting on planes, going to conferences, taking people through the steps. And I can't tell you where it happened. I can't tell you when it happened. I can just tell you that it absolutely positively happened. At some point in the course of that year, it occurred to me that I was enough. In and of myself, I was enough. I adore my husband. He is my best friend, and I love him. And if he were to come to me today and say, "I gotta go," it would break my heart, but it would not destroy my soul. because I no longer have to be married to my husband. I get to be married to my husband. And that, my friends, is an entirely different perspective. I am in this together. It is so different, right? So we had this great time. He comes back. All is well. We still have some of the stuff with finances. We've come up with this idea that he's not going to spend more than $250. We would say, to be kind, that neither one of us was going to spend more than $250 without talking to the other one. But the truth of the matter is, I have a hard time spending $250 on anything other than travel, and he has no problem spending $250 on anything. So we had this agreement that he wasn't going to spend more than $250 without talking to me. And because I still pay attention and I still know about alcoholism and I know that there's selfishness and self-centeredness that is the root of alcoholism, mine as well as his, I'm paying attention. My husband loves gadgets. He loves all the little phones and the watches and the, all the good stuff. And I benefit from that because he buys them for me, which is lovely. But he was looking at a new watch on the internet, and he's got an obsessive personality. That's a shocker for an alcoholic. And one Saturday evening, I saw him, and I said, "What are you looking at?" And this is what I heard. "Nothing. Looking at anything." And all right, and I'm just going to take a step back from that. And on Monday morning at 5 o'clock, I walked out of the bathroom, and he said, "I bought the watch." And I said, "How much did you pay for it?" And he said, "I got it on sale." And I said, "How much did you pay for it?" And he said, "I don't have time to do this. I'm going to work." And at 17 years, I thought, I'm going to hit him in the head with a brick. I've got an option sensor now. I'm going to hit him in the head with a brick. And I called my sponsor at a cycle, told her what happened, and she said, "Look, you guys have done all sorts of work on this financial issue. You've done the steps. You've worked with me. He's done the steps. He's worked with his sponsor. I think you guys need some outside help. Our literature says if you need outside help, go get it. Go get some outside help. And you need the appointment before you go to this conference this weekend." And so I went home. I had gotten a migraine headache. I would get migraine headaches when he was drinking, and I'd be in the bed by 5:15. Hadn't had a migraine headache in years. And he called me, and he said, "Where are you?" And I said, "I'm home. I've got a migraine." And he knew, oh, this is not good. And he came home, and I said to him, "I need to say something to you. I'm going to read it to you because I just need you to hear what I am saying. I don't want a response from you. I just need you to hear what I'm saying. Every time this happens, I feel as if the trust in our marriage is being cut at, right? It affects how I trust you because you've agreed to one thing and you do something different. And it's destroying my trust in you and it's destroying my trust in us, and I don't want to live like this. I just need you to know that." And so he left. He went and he called his sponsor. He came back and he said, "I want to do whatever you want me to do." And I said, "I want us to go to counseling." And he went, "Oh God, no, not counseling." And I didn't want to go counseling either because, you know, he and I, we both had some preconceived ideas, consent prior to investigation. And but I had made an appointment with the counselor, and off we went to the counselor. And the counselor, the very first thing he did was he had these cards about your attitudes towards money. And the thought that occurred to me was, well, if there are cards, we aren't the only people going through this. Right. And we discovered that we both had some really odd ideas about money. For me, it's security. And the counselor said, it's like Corey's building your financial house, and every time you go and you buy something, you rip a window out of the house. Right? And he's like, "Oh, well, I never thought about it like that." And then we realized he had some history with the finances from how he was raised, because he was raised in a house that was profoundly and deeply affected with the family disease of alcoholism. So we came together, and it opened up. The guy gave us, we had four sessions, he gave us all sorts of ways to learn how to talk to each other. And we have today what we call car conversations, because neither one of us is willing to jump out of a moving car. And we have hiking conversations, because neither one of us is willing to leave somebody out in the woods. So, but here's the kicker. We say beforehand, "I want to have a car conversation this weekend about. I want to have a hiking conversation this weekend about." Because what we used to do is, you might have already suspected what my profession is. I know how to argue. I know how to articulate a position. What we used to do, and we both would do it, we'd figure out what our position was, and we'd say, "I want to talk to you about this," and boom, here's all the reasons we got to do. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Answer now. Right? And he'd do the same thing to me. And my first reaction always is no, no, no. Right? His first reaction is like, "I don't know," and panic. So the response is, Now, I want to have a conversation about this. And so what happened in 2018, we'd had dogs for years, and we lost our last dog, and we had made a pronouncement. We're big on pronouncements. We are not getting another dog for a year. And I'm paying attention. I'm watching what's happening, and my husband's coming home from work every day, and he's getting more and more sad, and he's getting more and more upset with work, and he's not himself. And so I said, I want to have a car conversation this weekend. I want you to plan someplace for us to go. I want it to be outside of the house. And I want to talk about getting a dog. And his first response was, we're not getting a dog for a year. And I said, I want to talk about that. So we got in the car. We drove over here to Helen, Georgia. And I said, this is what I'm saying. I think we ought to revisit the idea of a dog. And as a result of that, we went out to Colorado in May of that year. That was in March. We went out to Colorado in May, and we got Ragnar the Magnificent Viking King. And I'm happy to show you the 596 pictures on my phone I have of him. But it's important because it wasn't just about the money. We learned how to talk to each other about everything. We have open and honest communication about everything. And so in the midst of this pandemic, I was a little bit worried when the pandemic rolled around because I was afraid. Well, Pat and I are both planning on retiring, and I was afraid about, you know, were we going to be okay together? And I only worked from home for about 4 months. He worked from home for a lot longer than that. We had a great time together and alleviated all of my concerns about working, about retirement. But we learned how to talk about stuff like that, you know? And the thing that happened, I'm back around to the job, right? The guy that I went to work for. In 2018, his daughter got nominated for a position. And he came to me and he said, I want you to go to her. And I said, you're getting rid of me? And he said, you have no idea how hard it is to give you up, but I want you to go to her. And so I ended up in 2018 switching jobs. I was very close to the end of my career. I'd started working for him when I first started with my first job out of law school. This is going to be my last job in my legal career working for her, and there's some synchronicity to go there. I've known her since she was 15. My nickname around Al-Anon and around my friends is the most resourceful one, and my sponsor says use those resources for good and not evil. And so I'm able to really build a firm foundation for her so that when I go next year, I'm going to retire next year, and when I do, I've left here in a very, very good place. I've left her very with a good process that's in place. I was talking to my sister in April, and I said, well, I could go this year, but I'm going to wait because we'd really get who we want if I wait until August. And she said, I just go. Who cares? You're not there anymore. And I thought, no, you guys have taught me to live a principled life. You've taught me by working the steps. I figured out what my principles are and what my values are, and I want to fulfill those. So I want to be a woman of character. I want to be a woman of integrity. I don't want to just walk out the door and say, on your own, see ya. That's how I want to be. Anybody else can do what they want to do, but I know what my principles are because I've worked the steps here, and I've been here. And I'm excited about that. And so we've had this plan a number of years ago. I was given the opportunity to apply for my dream job. And people said, well, what do you want me to pray for? I said, pray for God's will. And so people were praying for God's will, and I came this close to getting my dream job, and I didn't get it. And I had a couple people say, oh, you got screwed. And I said, no, I'm exactly where God would have me be. And 2 weeks later, that boss that had hired me initially in 2000 came to me and said, my wife is dying of terminal breast cancer. And I was exactly where I was supposed to be so that he could be where he was supposed to be. We talk about carrying this message. It's not just in the program. We talk about being of service. It's not just in the program. I could be of service to him. He knew he could trust me to be in the office so he could be where he needed to be, which was with his wife. And that's a direct result of Al-Anon. You guys told me that my job was to walk in the direction of my dreams. Where I ended up was up to God. We had talked for years and years and years that we were going to retire out west. When I didn't get that dream job, I applied for it a second time, and I didn't get it. And my boss called me, and he said, you didn't get it. And I know you got to do what's best for your family, but I really would like for you to stay with me. And I said, I talked to Kent, and I said, I really want to stay with him. And he said, okay, but I'd like you to think about not applying for the job again. And I said, well, why not? And he said, because I don't want to be in Montgomery when we're 72. If you get that job, we're tied here for a long time, and I don't want to do that. And I said, okay. He said, and I know you think you know where we are financially, but we have a saying in the military, trust but verify. I'd like to talk to a financial planner. And so we made an appointment, went and talked to the financial planner. As we're sitting there in front of the financial planner, Kent said, if this doesn't work out the way you think it's going to work out, you may have to get a second job. And I said, honey, I make more money than you. If this doesn't work out the way we think it's going to work out, you're getting the second job. And he said, well played, my friend. turns out I can actually do some math, and the guy said, you can retire at 60. And so for years, we planned on moving out west and going out west when we retired. We talked to my mother. She lives right across the street from me. She said she was going with us. And so last year, in the midst of the pandemic, we went out there to look at houses. And what we discovered when we got out there is my mother has difficulty with the altitude. And she couldn't do it health-wise. And so we came back, and Kent and I talked about it before we approached my mother and said, you know, you guys have taught me to be flexible. You've taught me I have choices. You've taught me to be the daughter that God's called me to be, that He's created me to be, and He's challenging me to be. And then you've taught me to ask, how would she act? Not how I would act. We know how I'd act. How would she act? And we made the decision we weren't going to move. And so I said to my mom, would you be okay if we stayed? She went, oh, thank you, God. I didn't want to leave. Right? So it's the right decision. We know it's the right decision. When I saw Amanda yesterday, when are you moving? I thought you'd move. And I said, we're not moving. You know, but we learned to pivot. We learned to take life as it comes. We learned to be flexible. One of the things Kent said to me was, if we don't move, can we travel? And I said, yeah. And so last year, in the midst of the pandemic, my husband was having a really, really, really hard time. And he came to me and he said, for the first time, I've really thought that I might end up doing something harmful to myself. I got to quit my job. Can we afford to do that? And I said, well, let me take a look at it. And so we looked at it. We walk every morning. People are horrified by this. We get up at 3. We walk the dog from 3:30 to 4. And then Kent and I walk from 4 to 5. That's our time together. It's when we do prayer. It's when we do meditation. It's when we talk. One of these mornings, I said, I've looked at it. I said, we can do that. If you feel this is something you need to do, we can do it. But it's going to cut into what we'll be able to do in retirement. And you just need to know that. This is what this looks like. This is what that looks like. And he said, well, let me think about it. And I said, okay. And then a couple days later, about 3 days later, he said, I went and had lunch with some folks today. And I've talked about it with them. And I'm not retiring. And I went, oh, thank you, God. Based on the principles that he's been taught and based on the principles I've been taught, he said, what's best for the family? So he retires a week from Tuesday with his full retirement. Yes. So I'm fixing to enter a whole new realm of what is that going to look like, because I'm going to work for another year. But he said, can we travel? And I said, yes. So, you know, in March, we went to Europe. We just got back a couple weeks ago. We got back last week, actually, from going to Istanbul. We're going to go to Budapest in December. It's because you guys have taught me, I have right here, right now. You taught me I have a God of my understanding who wants me to be happy, joyous, and free. You have God who said, if you take the action and you walk in the direction of your dreams and you proceed where the way opens, all will be well. It may not be easy, but all will be well. And all is well today. I have a life today that is so far beyond my wildest dreams. I had no idea my life could be as incredible as my life is. I adore my husband. I love where we are. I love how we are together. I love how we are with the dog. It is just incredible to me. If you are new, or if you've been here a while, if you've not worked the steps, or you haven't worked the steps for a while, I know we say keep coming back. I say stay. Stay with us. Stay with us long enough to develop a relationship with the God of your understanding who wants you to be just as happy, joyous, and free as I know that God wants me to be. But I got that not from sitting in meetings. I did not change in a meeting. I got inspired to change in a meeting, but I changed when I worked the steps with a sponsor, and I did the service work, and I showed up to my commitments, and I continue to show up to my commitments, because I do not want to lose the life that I have right now, right here. Thank you guys so much for allowing me to share.